Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live today from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Yesterday, I had the chance to take my family and a friend who was in town to the Oklahoma State Fair. I found out something new about the State Fair. Apparently, those people working the different booths at the fair actually travel on the road. So they pack up the fair after a week and a half. They move to another state, and they just keep on going and going and going for months at a time. I used to think that those people just had regular jobs the rest of the year and then just randomly 10 days out of the year staff the state fair. So I learned otherwise by talking to one of those workers yesterday. Got a chance to have one of those big smoked turkey legs. And then after about an hour, I was completely satisfied and I won't need to be going to the state fair for another year probably. So really nice weekend, and it's good to be back here at the radio studio today. God's work operates using one-man rule. That one man today is Philadelphia Church of God Pastor General Gerald Flurry. You could easily prove this for yourself by going to the Trumpet Literature Library at thetrumpet.com. And it's the responsibility of all of us to follow that one man as he follows Jesus Christ. You can find that in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. I just happen to be Mr. Flurry's grandson and also his personal assistant, and I've been traveling with him quite frequently over the last 7 years as well. So I thought it would be helpful today just to share some lessons that I've learned through my many personal experiences with God's apostle. The first one is pray always. Back when I was an Armstrong College student, this was about 7 years ago, I was really having some problems, some struggles, some trials I was dealing with. And in a meeting with my grandfather, he said, and this is just basically a paraphrase, but pretty accurate, whenever you're dealing with a problem, go in the prayer closet and don't come out until you have faced it. Essentially, go in the prayer closet, cry out to God about the problem, formulate a plan of attack, and make sure that you do not stop praying until you are ready to face that problem and conquer it. Really, that has stuck with me ever since, and I've thought about that quite a lot. Luke 18, verses 1 through 5 state, "And he spoke a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint, saying, there was in a city a judge, which feared not God, neither regarded man. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, avenge me of mine adversary. And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me." This story that Christ tells here in Luke 18, verses 1 through 5, just shows that by simply being persistent in our requests, we can get results from anybody, even if it's an unrighteous judge who only cares about himself, like in this parable. However, God is far more willing and able to answer our cries than an unrighteous judge is. By just praying and praying and praying, we can know for a fact that we're going to get the results that we need. Not always the results that we humanly want, but the results that are best for us and for our character. Mr. Flurry is an excellent example of this, not just in what he told me about dealing with the problem by praying about it over and over again, but in his own example too, in his own personal life. He is an example of, you might even say, extreme patience. He prays for many months at times before making big decisions. I've sat in on meetings with him before where my impulse on the spot is either to answer yes or no. Thankfully, I'm not the one making those decisions. He says, I'll pray about it. And he gets back when the time is right, when God has given the answer. Rather than just saying yes or no on the spot, as I probably would in some of those situations, he makes sure to get God's perspective on it first. And no matter how long it takes to figure out that perspective, he is willing to keep asking until God provides the answer. The second point I've learned from a lifetime of experience with God's apostle, develop childlike humility. Mr. Fleury is very easy to approach and to talk with. It's really not intimidating at all. In meetings, he spends a lot of time just listening. Now, what he has to say is usually the most important information. And yet, in most meetings, he's listening well over half the time. When he speaks, when he is in public, it's clear that he doesn't really expect anyone to take note of him or to praise him or to care that much about what he's doing. But because he is so unassuming, it only makes people around him care even more about him. He doesn't have that repellent shield of arrogance. A lot of people can't stand arrogance. Probably all of us can't stand it. There's not even a hint of that from him. This is a quote from an article titled Making a Virtue of Pomposity from Mr. Joel Hilliker on the Trumpet website back in 2007. And he's just talking in this article about how our political system really is absurd. Here in the United States, presidential candidates present themselves as the only solution to all problems. He quoted one politician who said, "My party has the chance to nominate someone to save the world. Literally, save the world." That's what this candidate thought of the importance of that office of the president. That one man on his own could just save the world. Here's what Mr. Hilliker writes in this article. How many people even blink at a politician proffering himself as the nation's new Messiah? That idea really isn't all that unusual in a society that has made a religion out of self-love. Swagger saturates our courts as much as it does our sports arenas. Ego fills our boardrooms as well as our talk radio and reality television. And little wonder, pride is the orthodox instruction in our educational system, the incubator of the self-esteem movement. We coddle and praise our students from kindergarten to college simply for being uniquely themselves. The best statesmen, by contrast, have always had a sense of modesty, a basic understanding of their human frailness, a humility about their power to effect change in the world, a sense of perspective of living in God's shadow. Even amid the pomp and pageantry that accompany high office, their feet remain firmly planted on earth. A real leader doesn't think he's more than he is. He doesn't think he is the source of his success. He is humble. He has that childlike humility. Matthew 18, verse 4 says, "Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven." I can speak from experience. I know for a fact that Mr. Fleury is more humble than me and that he also has a greater future reward than me. That is because he is humble as a little child. The third point I've learned from Mr. Fleury: never think you're above the law. Mr. Fleury is the top man in the entire church. If anybody could do whatever he wanted within the church, it would be him. And yet, he meticulously obeys all rules within the church, whatever it might be. Whether it's a church potluck and certain people are supposed to go through the line first and then others, he will abide by that. He doesn't just march up to the front of the line and do his own thing. He doesn't question any of the rules or standards put in place in the various parts of the church. He does what is expected. This also extends out into society. He is a peaceful member of society. You'll never see him making a scene or talking down to waiters, bellboys, or anyone in the service industry. He abides by their standards without questioning, even if it doesn't make sense. He knows that obeying God's law is the whole reason he's so blessed and happy. And you will hear a lot more about the law in one of his upcoming Key of David television programs. Point number four, what I've learned from Mr. Fleury: see the best in others. See the best in others. It can be so easy for us as human beings to judge by appearance, to judge by first impression, and never allow someone to grow past whatever bad first impression they may have given. When I was having those struggles in college, like I mentioned earlier, and even at the height of those problems in my second year of college, he actually asked me to start going on trips with him. When he would travel to see various PCG congregations to observe the Sabbath or the holy days outside of Edmond, to go somewhere for the feast by plane, whatever it might have been, most of the time, almost every time, I got to travel with him. There were times where I didn't even think I served much of a purpose physically on these trips. The first trip was 7 hours south down to Texas to observe a holy day. And he wouldn't even let me do all the driving. So I thought, what was my purpose? What am I even doing here if I'm not really serving as much as I could be physically? I thought about this and I later realized that he was just giving me an opportunity. He saw the best in me before I could see it in myself. He was giving me an opportunity to follow his example. As a loving grandfather, first and foremost, he wanted to try to help me. He saw the best in me. And that's something we all need to learn from, rather than writing people off, rather than judging people on first contact. He's, in plenty of other occasions, seen the best in others, even at times where I didn't think it would be possible. In some situations where we've interacted with other people, we'll go away from that and he'll say, wow, that guy sure is passionate. He sure is excitable. When maybe I would have judged that same person as being rude and talking too much. But he always could see the best in other people and point out the positives rather than the negatives. Another point I've learned from Mr. Fleury, this is number five: never complain. For many years, he's had different health issues, and yet he never mentions them unless I must prepare for them logistically. Unless it's absolutely necessary for me to help him out with those things as part of my job. He never complains. That's the same is true if we're out in public, if we're at a restaurant, or if we're at a hotel. Even if things are not to the standard we expected, you will never hear him go on and on and on about the negatives. He has that positive mindset that really does prevail over whatever the negatives are. And it makes the negatives seem so tiny by comparison. The sixth point I've learned: always give. Always give. I've seen this my whole life through family dinners, trips to the bookstore. He's always the one to pay, and he's very difficult to ever get into an argument with. The closest you'll ever have to arguing with him is if you try to pay. He will be the one paying, and that is just how it's going to go. I remember one time, several years ago, a really nice couple tried to host him at a nice restaurant in Oklahoma City. And of course, the entire time they were expecting to pay. This was obvious to me. And yet at the end of the meal, my grandfather silently pulled out his card and put it on the table. And so they went back and forth for a little bit. I briefly considered pulling out my own card and putting it on the table, even though I didn't have nearly enough money to do that. But that was just what he wanted to do. And he wanted to give. It doesn't just have to do with money, but it has to do with time or just being someone who's willing to listen. Always give. And the seventh point I have today, the seventh and final point, have a sense of humor. Mr. Fleury loves to laugh and smile, and he will quickly do so whenever appropriate. He never gets offended by critics. He's quick to laugh at himself. And some of the funniest times at Sabbath services are when he is speaking and he teases somebody in a loving way. And everyone roars with laughter because they can tell that he is clearly joking and it is motivated by love. Having a sense of humor, seeing the funny side of things rather than seeing the negative, that's something that Mr. Fleury has always done. So these are 7 points that I've learned from just being around him my entire life. Being around Mr. Fleury just as his grandson or in a professional setting. These are some really helpful things that I think we could all really learn from and try to apply. So again, those points are 1, pray always. 2, develop childlike humility. 3, never think you're above the law. 4, see the best in others. 5, never complain. 6, always give. And 7, have a sense of humor. So I hope you found this of value today and something that could really help you. Thank you very much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.